The world's biggest economies are still playing catch-up with the Inflation Reduction Act. Live from the BBC World Service, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Leanna Byrne. When President Biden unveiled the Inflation Reduction Act last summer, policymakers around the world jumped to respond. Its $350 billion package of subsidies is designed to speed up production of green tech in the US, and that cash turned the heads of manufacturers in Europe and elsewhere. This meant other big economies needed to come up with something similar. This morning, the UK is unveiling its plans for a net zero economy with a focus on green energy. But Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt has already ruled out, and this is a direct quote, going toe-to-toe with our friends and allies in some distortive global subsidy race. He wants to encourage private capital to invest billions in energy companies instead. Alan Hollis is chief executive of Amty Power in Scotland. What does he make of the UK approach?
We need to be attracting investment into the UK. You know, we see with the Inflation Reduction Act and the EU's Green Industrial Strategy, incentives to drive inward investment. There's no question that as a country, we're facing competition from other nations, but we need government to support to develop the industry, to encourage inward investment and to create jobs. The Inflation Reduction Act, I think, is already starting to do what it was set up to do, which is to drive the inward investment. And that's why it's somewhat disappointing to see the potential 6 months delay in a clear strategy for the UK.
As Alan mentioned, the EU has already set out its plans. I thought I would go back to Detlef Neuhaus, chief executive of green energy company SolarWatt in Dresden, where I was back in January, to ask him if the EU's gone far enough. Hi, Detlef.
Hi.
The last time we spoke, you said that because of the Inflation Reduction Act, you know of some companies that had decided to move their operations to the US rather than investing in Germany when they had plans to. Has that been reversed now that the EU is saying, actually, we have plans for green? No, it hasn't.
No, it hasn't. Because you change your plan as a manager when you know with what to plan. And at the moment, nobody knows really what's in this package of the European Union. It's really hard to find really concrete answers on that. I see that there are movements to the USA at the moment.
You sound pretty disappointed by that. Are you?
Disappointed is possibly not the right word. Frustration is a better word. It's frustrating. Don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan from the European Union, really. But it's a bit frustrating that we need for everything. We need, I don't know, months and years. It's very complicated. It takes very long. And that's the reason why I'm a bit frustrated. We see that the European Union can do differently. We saw that on the Russian war, how quick it can be to find ways to react.
Detlef Neuhaus, chief executive of green energy firm SolarWatt. Thank you so much for joining us on Marketplace.
Thank you.
Now, let's do the numbers. London's FTSE is doing well this morning, up by 0.6%, and a mixed picture for Asian stocks, with the Hang Seng up and the Nikkei down. And overnight, we've heard from the Chinese Premier Li Qiang, who's been speaking at an international business summit in China, and veiled comments aimed at the US over China's access to advanced technologies such as microchips. Li said Beijing opposed trade protectionism and decoupling, which is just another word for when countries cool off their trade friendship. The British newspaper The Guardian has apologised after learning it was founded in 1821 on wealth created from slavery. The Scott Trust, which owns The Guardian, says it will invest around $12 million over the next decade in a programme of restorative justice. Catherine Viner is the editor of The Guardian. She told the BBC's Sarah Montague about what they've established.
We've known forever that The Guardian's founder, John Edward Taylor, was a cotton merchant in Manchester, and that the cotton industry relied on the enslavement of people in the Caribbean and the US and elsewhere. But somehow we'd not quite seen it properly. And we commissioned some historians to look into it. And they discovered that indeed 9 of the 11 people who funded The Guardian had links to cotton and therefore slavery. And one of the funders, in fact, owned a plantation in Jamaica, so owned 122 slaves. And the founder himself, John Edward Taylor, as a cotton merchant, also profited.
At the time that The Guardian was founded, it was in favour of the abolition of slavery.
That's right. In fact, even the funder who owned his own plantation and owned slaves was in favour of the abolition of slavery. And there's some really interesting work about sort of cognitive dissonance and how people sort of persuaded themselves that things certain, you know, behaving a certain way and thinking a certain way was compatible. It's really interesting.
It's strange. What, a form of hypocrisy?
Cognitive dissonance is probably the phrase I'd use, but I guess it is, yeah. There's quite a lot in this country that's been really unexamined about the sources of wealth, the sources of privilege, how society is constructed, all levels of society. It deserves further examination.
£10 million. Are you going to try to track down the descendants of those who were enslaved by the founders?
So our historians tell us that that's a really difficult thing to do. The enslaved, their names are very rarely recorded. Their surnames are not recorded at all. You only sort of, it's not like a positive census. It's sort of this person was sold to this person, you know, and it's very affecting, actually. There'll be a baby aged 1 month old and an old man aged 90, and they're all listed as enslaved. And so there's a separate project that the Scott Trust is doing, which is a sort of reparative justice work with the community in Jamaica, community in the Sea Islands off the US. But I think it's also worth acknowledging that, you know, no amount of money is enough. We're just one company, and we would most important thing is that we try and inspire other institutions to look at their own history.
Catherine Viner, editor of the Guardian newspaper in Britain, speaking there. And that's it from the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. For more on these stories, as always, you can visit the BBC News website. Thanks to James Graham for producing. Joe Stickler was on tech today. Our editor is Joe Critcher, and I'm Leanna Byrne. Thanks for listening.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.